Memoirs of Charles James Yellowplush, sometime footman in many genteel families. Chapter 3. Mr. Deuceace. My inexorable social rise now continued apace. Soon, I found myself body servant to...
The Honourable Algernon Percy Deuceace, youngest and fifth son of the Earl of Crabs. Your good health.
The young gentleman was a gentleman and no mistake. He had no income and a great deal of debt. Then one day, he got lucky at cards, or claimed it was luck, and made a killing. Now, no honourable gentleman wants to waste good money on paying his creditors when he can use it enjoying himself abroad, which is why soon after I entered the Honourable Mr. Deuceace's service, I found myself tossing about on the Channel, heading for France. As soon as I saw the waves, black and frothy like fresh-drawn porter a-dashing against the ribs of our gallant bark, the standard of England floating at the masthead, the white rocks of Albany and the bathing machines disappearing in the distance, and the stewards are getting ready the basins, I felt for the first time the might, the majesty of existence. And I said to myself,
Yellowplush, my boy, your life is about to commence. Your career as a man dates from your entrance on this packet boat. Be wise, be manly, be cautious. You're no longer a boy now, but a footman. Throw down your boyish games, throw off your childish habits, and throw...
Here, I recollect, I was obliged to stop. Suffice it to say, I now discovered what basins was made for. Fortunately, my gastric torments eventually came to an end. We landed in Boulogne, and soon we were speeding towards Paris, or Paris, as the French for some reason choose to call it. My master wrote a letter to his beloved father, Lord Crabs, now a widower.
My dear father, I have determined to spend a few months in Paris in order to improve my grasp of French language and culture. And may I therefore take the opportunity to ask you for my quarter's salary? I'm not an expensive man, my dear father, but £50 would vastly add to the comfort of my continental excursion. Heaven bless you, dear father, and all those beloved ones still dwelling under the dear old roof. Ever your affectionate son, Algernon.
To this delightful letter, his lordship replied by return of post,
My dear Algernon, we are all charmed by your warm remembrances of us, not having seen you for 7 years. I am sorry, truly sorry, that my account at Coutts is so low just now as to render a payment of your allowance for the present impossible. I see by my book that I now owe you 9 quarters, or 450 pines. Depend on it, dear boy, that they shall be faithfully paid over to you on the first opportunity. I read in the London papers of your recent successes at the gaming table. As you seem now in such high feather, can you, dearest Algernon, lend me 500 pines?
The old rogue! The damned old rogue!
Fortunately, we were soon in that French capital known as Paris. My master forgot all about his father in the important pursuit of pleasure and advantage. And being personable and aristocratic to those who did not know him better, he soon made the acquaintance of 2 well-born English ladies.
My lady, your servant.
Oh, Mr. Deuceace, how delightful.
Miss Griffin.
Dear Mr. Deuceace, how too delightful.
Lady Griffin was the widow of Lieutenant General Sir George Griffin, KCB. Miss Matilda Griffin was his daughter by his previous marriage.
Lady Griffin, if I may have the pleasure of the next dance.
Oh, but of course.
It seems so absurd for someone so young to be the stepmother of anybody.
Oh, you flatterer.
Lady Leonora Griffin was 27, fat, fair and vivacious.
But, Mr. Deuceace...
Don't worry, Miss Griffin. I very much hope to have the honour of being your partner in the dance after that. Age, you understand, before beauty.
Miss Matilda Griffin was 23. She was dark and my lady was fair. She was sentimental and my lady Leonora was cold. She was, well, there's no way else of saying it, a good deal uglier. My master danced with them, sang hymns with them, and rode with them in the Champs-Élysées, which is French for Hyde Park.
Captain Dobbin said, no, it wasn't, it was an elephant.
Oh, Mr. Deuces, you are such a wag.
And Denise, you have a glorious soul.
No, ladies, I do believe you flatter
me. It's a long time since I met a man who made me laugh so much. Or had such exquisite manners.
Oh, look, there is the dear Marquis of Steyne. Oh, my lord, how are you?
My dear Lady G, as handsome as ever.
Mr. Deuces.
What is it?
My lady is not looking. Pray, take this note.
What is it?
A poem. An outpouring from my heart. Here.
Oh. Ah, the dear Marquis is so very, very wicked.
The two ladies already hated each other. Now Mr. Deuceace was on the scene, they positively detested each other. In their different ways, they were both falling in love with him. Now, though my master was a scoundrel, he was a gentleman. And Miss Matilda came a little too strong with her ardour and attachment for one of his taste. Left to his own devices, the sharp-eyed, pleasure-loving Lady Griffin was the one he would have chosen. There was a spark of genuine attraction between them. But, as he confided to me one evening...
The heart of the matter, Charles, is which of them has the most money?
Well, would have thought that was simple to determine, sir. Here, let me take those.
With an English family, yes. But Sir George was in the East Indian Army, and his will is in Calcutta or somewhere outlandish. So no chance of getting a copy, damn it.
So what is to be done, sir?
We'll keep them both in play till I can strike the best fish of the two. And there's no question Miss Matilda is hooked.
But then one morning, there was an unexpected incident of a sort much beloved by novelists.
What?
Algy, my boy! Don't you know me?
What are you doing?
Surely you know your own father.
My lord, of course. The unexpected pleasure of seeing you and the confounded cigar smoke surrounding you.
As a matter of fact, these cigars of yours are damned bad. Can't you get something better? And here, have some of your port. That isn't quite so bad.
No, I hardly drink or smoke, Father. These are just for guests.
Very wise, very hospitable. You have it all, my boy. Fine rooms, fine horses, fine wine. And all for 200 a year.
I presume you mean the 200 a year which you pay me.
The very sum. Why, that's the wonder. I never pay the 200 a year, and you keep up all the state upon nothing. Give me your secret, my boy, and upon my word, I will pay you your 200 a year.
My lord, will you have the goodness to tell me what this visit means? You leave me to starve for all you care. You find me in prosperity.
Precisely, my boy. Precisely. Keep your temper and pass that bottle. I find you in prosperity, and a young gentleman of your genius and acquirements asks me why I seek your society, because you are in prosperity, with not one but two wealthy young heiresses in your sight, so I hear. Why else should I bother myself about you?
My lord, I should ask you again.
Let me finish. Have your family ever pretended any love for you or you for us? You don't need your father to tell you that you are a swindler and a spendthrift. I have paid thousands for the debts of yourself and your brothers, and if you pay nobody else, I am determined you shall repay me. You would not do it by fair means when I wrote to you and asked you for a loan of money.
Father,
I knew you wouldn't. And if I'd written to warn you of my coming, you would have given me the slip. And so I come uninvited to force you to repay me. Your good health.
My lord, the moment I saw you, I expected something was on foot. A swindler and spendthrift I may be, but I'm merely following my august father's precious example.
When you are sober, you will perhaps be wise enough to know, fool as I may be, I am not such a fool as you think me, and that if I have got money, I intend to keep it.
Well, well, my boy, if you will resist, tant pis pour toi. I have no desire to ruin you, and I am not in the least angry, but I must and will have 1,000 pints. You'd better give me the money at once. It will cost you more if you don't.
Sir, I will be equally candid. I would not give you a farthing to save you from whatever...
Well, 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 it's your decision. If you change your mind, I'm staying with Lord Bobtail, the British ambassador.
Charles.
Yes, sir.
Show his lordship the way out.
Very good, sir. This way, my lord.
Lovely to see you, my boy.
You too, father. Make sure you're wrapped up warm. And mind the steps.
Here we are, my lord.
Thank you, Charles. You seem a bright, promising young lad. Pity you're in the service of someone like my son.
Oh, I'm honoured to be his footman, my lord.
Ah, good reply.
But of course, if I can ever be of use to my lord, his father...
A better reply. You'll go far, my boy.
Sir.
I would not have you think I was being disloyal to my master... But a servant has a living to make, and I could not but think the visit of his pa boded Mr. Deuceace no good. There was mischief afoot, as we soon discovered when a-visiting the ladies.
Oh, Mr. Deuceace, oh, such excitement. We've just received an invitation from Lady Bobtail at the British Embassy. Look,
read it out.
It is an age since we met. Harassing public duties occupy so much myself and Lord Bobtail that we have scarce time to see our private friends. Will you excuse so very unceremonious an invitation and dine with us at the embassy today? Well, I...
And do read the next sentence too, Mr. Deuceace.
Yes. We shall have the pleasure of hearing, I hope, some of your charming daughters singing during the evening.
Is that not charming of Lady Bobtail?
Indeed. All the same, I wonder at the suddenness of the invitation. Oh. I fear she's done it simply to fill up 2 unexpectedly empty places at her table.
Nonsense. It was brought in the ambassador's own coach and sealed with his seal of arms.
Well, I warn you, the food will be very poor if you do go there.
But you've always been promising to get us invited.
Yes, that's true, Matilda. Now, for once we agree. And now we've a chance to go without any help from you. In fact, I've already sent my footman with an acceptance.
For indeed, they knew too few lords ever to refuse an invitation from any of them. People in the middling rank of life are like that. So my master, suspecting his father's handiwork in this invitation, was left to his own devices for the evening. But to give him credit, he did not waste the time.
Damn it, Charles. I spent the entire evening taking tea with that damned old companion of my lady's, Miss Kixie. Of course, the old thing was delighted by the attention, but the tea nearly killed me.
And might I inquire why you were taking tea with Miss Kixie, sir?
Are you playing the fool deliberately, Charles? I had to find out from her all she knows about the family money matters. I need to settle at once on which of the 2 griffins I should marry before my father wreaks more damn mischief.
And what, if I might be so bold, sir, did you discover?
Everything she knows. She's not that much. It was 9,000 a year, she heard say, in money, in houses, in banks in India and whatnot. Both ladies signed papers for selling or buying, and the money seemed equally divided between them. Oh, just think, Charles. I could next morning, if I liked, be master of 5,000 per annum.
Oh, congratulations, sir.
But the snag is, which has the bulk of the money, the mother or the daughter? Damn pity I can't marry both.
Ah, dear Algernon.
Yes, Matilda.
As you see, Lady Griffin is busy with letters from London from nasty lawyers and people.
I am.
Really?
So come and sit by me at the piano, you naughty man, you.
Willingly, my dear Miss Griffin. Why, I must declare it's quite a tête-à-tête. So, how was your evening at the embassy? I warned you it might be dull.
Oh, no, it was delightful. And we met a friend of yours at the embassy.
Would that by any chance be my father?
Oh, yes. What a dear, delightful old man. And how he loves you, Mr. Deuceace.
Oh, amazingly.
He spoke of nothing but you, and such praises of you. He spoke of you being his favourite child, and regretted that you were not his eldest son. I can leave him nothing but the small portion of a younger brother, he said. But never mind. He has talents, and a noble name, and seems to have funds of his own.
Oh, yes, indeed, a sufficiency, my dear Miss Griffin. To a man of my moderate habits, an ample provision.
Mr. Deuce-Hayes?
Yes, my lady?
I believe you're talking about money matters there. I wish you would come to the aid of poor me. Come over here, naughty boy, and help me out with this long, long sum.
Oh, with pleasure, my lady.
My eye, how his eyes shone as he skipped across the room and seated himself by my lady. For she was surrounded by great piles of papers, bankers' books and lawyers' letters and whatnot.
Look, my agents write me over that they have received a remittance of 7,200 rupees at 2 shillings and 9 pence a rupee. Mm. Do tell me what that sum is in pounds and shillings.
990 pounds.
Oh, good heavens, how quick you are. I dare say you're right. I'm sure I can't go through the fatigue to see. But here's another question. Whose money is this? Mine or Matilda's? According to the terms of poor Sir George's will, I really don't know how to dispose of the money except to spend it. Matilda, what shall we do?
You know I leave these matters to you, my lady.
Well then, Algernon, you tell me, please.
Well, the problem is, I don't know how Sir George left his money. You must let me see the will first.
Oh, willingly.
Ah. Master's chair seemed suddenly to have got springs in the cushion. He was obliged to hold himself down. If he hadn't been so excited, he'd have seen Lady Griffin looking at him with quite a cold eye as he stared greedily at the paper.
It's only a copy taken by my hand from Sir George's own manuscript. Soldiers, you know, do not employ lawyers much.
Yes, of course,
This was written on the night before going into action.
I quite understand.
And, perhaps it's easiest if you see it for yourself.
Yes, thank you. I, George Griffin, the whole of my property in trust for my wife, Leonora, and my only legitimate child, Matilda Griffin. The interest to be paid to them share and share alike.
Well, that's clear. Shall I take it back?
No. The principal to remain untouched until the death of my wife, Leonora, when it shall be paid to my daughter, Matilda Griffin, her heirs, executor...
There! I don't think we need to read any more. The rest is stuff. But now you know the whole business... tell us, what is to be done with this money?
Why, the money unquestionably should be divided between you.
Well, if you say so. And here's me thinking it should all be Matilda's. Oh, thank you, dear Algernon. Mr. Deuce-Ace?
There was a pause for a minute or two after my master had read the will. He left the desk and paced up and down the room for a while. He was unusually silent. But I knew what he was a-thinking. In the end, Miss Matilda, who was the younger, though the uglier, gets it all. And there was nothing my lady could do about that. Finally, he spoke.
I'm almost sorry, my dear Lady Griffin, that you have let me read that will.
Well,
for an attachment such as I feel must seem, I fear, mercenary, when the object of it is so greatly favoured by worldly fortune.
Yes?
Yes.
Miss Griffin, Matilda.
Algernon.
I know I may say the word. Your dear eyes grant me the permission. I need not tell you, or you, dear mother-in-law.
I beg your pardon.
Dear Matilda, stepmother, I'm sorry. Anyway, dear Matilda, my tender, beautiful Matilda.
Dearest Algernon.
I do not need to tell you how long, how fondly I have adored you. Speak it, dear girl, from your own sweet lips, in the presence of an affectionate parent. Utter the sentence which is to seal my happiness for life. Matilda, dearest Matilda, say you love me.
I do. Oh, he was right. Krabs was right. Oh!
Many of you may be impressed by the eloquence of Mr. Deuce-Ace in these circumstances. But I had seen round his chambers for several weeks a version of this speech with Leonora given as an alternative.
Dearest Algernon.
Dearest Matilda.
Now, if I was one of those fashionable romantic authors, this would be the end of my tale. But life, from my observation, only very rarely resembles fiction. The Earl of Crabs had opened the eyes of Lady Griffin, and she was now Mr. Deuceace's sworn enemy. But perhaps he had not reckoned on the power of love, or gullibility, in Miss Matilda, who seemed determined to marry her Algernon, whatever obstacles were put in her way.
My Algernon, my brave and beautiful, my soul's lord. For a while, Lady Griffin remained adamant and refused to admit you to my presence. But she has softened thanks to the intervention of your noble father. Pray come and see me today. Dear Algernon, a thousand, thousand million kisses. Adieu, adieu, adieu.
Don't like the sound of his lordship being around. But there's not a moment to be wasted. I must fly to Matilda. Damn it, Charles, what's that noise?
I'll go and look, sir. It was the French equivalent of the bailiffs. Now, Master had been spending his money like water because he was labouring under a very common mistake. Namely, once he was out of England, he might whistle at all the IOUs he left behind him. But, as we were to discover, if a French gentleman acquires them in any way, then he can pursue the Englishman who has drawn them, even though he should be in France. And somebody, one can only guess Lady Griffin, had set this process in motion.
Well?
Downstairs, there's a bailiff with a couple of gendarmes who are asking for you. You must run for your life.
Bailiffs? I don't, thank heaven, owe a shilling to any man.
It's not a case I'd argue with them just now, sir, for they'll arrest you any moment.
What shall I do? I have to get to Miss Matilda's at once, and I...
One moment, sir. I have an idea. Quick as lightning, I throws off my livery coat, claps my gold lace hat on Master's head, and makes him put on my livery.
Now, wear livery? Never!
It's that or the debtor's prison, sir.
Oh, very well.
Meanwhile, I wrap myself in his dressing gown and loll back on the sofa.
Pray let them in, Charles.
What? Oh, I see.
Monsieur Algernon Percy Deuceace?
C'est moi.
Then I arrest you for debt.
D'accord, monsieur. Charles?
What? Oh yes, sir.
Go and tell the coachman I won't drive today.
What do you mean?
Go out of the door, Charles, and down the stairs, and out of the house to talk to the coachman.
Ah, yes. I see. Yes, yes, very, very good, sir. My lord.
Now, messieurs, I am at your service.
You must come with us to the prison of Saint-Pélagie.
Are you sure?
Of course, Monsieur Deuceace.
But pardonnez-moi, I've changed my mind. I'm not Monsieur Deuceace, I'm Charles James Yellowplush. Voila!
And I pulled open my dressing gown to reveal the plush tights with which my name is permanently associated.
I have been hoaxed. Allez!
I had saved my master, who, if he had any sense, was on his way to Miss Matilda and her fortune as fast as possible. I felt mightily pleased with myself, I can tell you. Then, an hour later, there was another knock.
Ah, there you are, Charles.
My lord, I...
No, this is an informal visit. I hear you saved my dear son's skin just now.
He was about to be arrested for debt, sir.
So I gathered. I'm afraid Lady Griffin will stop at nothing to get her revenge, so thank you for your noble effort on my son's behalf.
Oh, I'd happily do the same again, my lord.
I've no doubt you would. But it would probably be better if you didn't, if you understand me.
I'm not sure if I do.
There's £50 if you don't.
Well, I feel a great debt of loyalty to my master, my lord.
Very admirable. Then £100 and 10 in advance. I expect that's more money than my son has paid you in wages all the time you've been in his service, am I right?
Yes, my lord.
You're a smart young man, Charles, so no more heroics. I'd be very happy to offer you a place myself, if things go well.
Is there anything else I can do for you, my lord?
Let me know where the wedding's taking place. Goodbye for now, Charles.
You may imagine the torment of loyalty, principle, and professional etiquette into which my soul was now plunged. But I held fast to two things. One, my master was a scoundrel. Two, the £10 note in my hand. What lies he told her I can only imagine, but Miss Matilda accepted Mr. Deuceace's marriage proposal, and they were to be married in a church whose address I had communicated elsewhere. So now, as writers say, for the denouement.
Monsieur Algernon Percy Deuceace.
Damn it, man, can't you see I'm about to get married?
I'm sorry, monsieur, but you do not evade us twice. I arrest you for debt.
Algernon, what is this? You promise me. Yes. What debts?
All these papers I am holding in my hand, mademoiselle.
But you told me you were rich, Algernon. You are nothing but a common debtor.
No.
All the warnings about you I have been given have proved to be true. You have cruelly deceived me.
My love, my own, listen to me.
I think she's fainted away, sir.
This way, monsieur.
Charles, look after my bride. Tell her to wait for me. Tell her I love her.
It was some weeks before Mr. Deuceace managed, by fair means and foul, to get himself out of the debtor's prison. As soon as he could, he hurried as fast as he could to my Lady Griffin's.
Why, Mr. Deuceace?
Where is she? Where is my precious Matilda?
You mean you don't know?
Know what?
She's married.
Married? To whom? Well,
your father, of course. Behind my back, he had been wooing her, and your arrest for debt gave him a chance to prove that you were worth nothing. Oh, he's an insidious old rogue. I should never have trusted him.
I couldn't agree more. But, my lady, since they are gone, can't we push back time and be as we once were?
What do you mean?
Leonora, you know there's always been a spark of passion between us. Will you marry me?
Marry you? You lying, despicable, two-faced swindler.
Oh, but I...
Maybe once I thought we might, but not now. Just get out of my house. Go on, get out!
Lady Griffin eventually married an ancient French marquis. Mr. Deuceace was last seen begging in the streets of Brussels. All of this I learned from servants of the former Lady Griffin, now the Marquise de Camembert. For I was already back in England and in the service of the Earl of Crabs. That fine model of an old English gentleman.
The Yellow Plush Papers by William Makepeace Thackeray was adapted for radio by Stephen Wyatt. Charles Yellowplush was played by Adam Buxton. Deuceace was Chris Pavlow and Crabs was Trevor Peacock. Lady Griffin was Jill Cardo, Matilda Laura Molyneux and the bailiff Dan Starkey. The director was Jessica Drumgoole.